Trigger warning for this episode. Subject matter includes death and moments of wanting to die. Hopefulness. Finding your purpose. Embracing the suck of your illness. Doing what you can. If these are issues you struggle with, then you're in luck because they're also topics of this episode. I'm joined by cancer warrior Terry Tucker as he takes us through his journey on this week's episode of Chronically Living. I'm Kelsey Harris, chronic illness warrior and psychotherapist. On Chronically Living and How to Make the Most of It, we're providing tangible ways to improve the well-being of spoonies. So get ready to make the most out of your life, even with that pesky chronic illness.
My name is Terry Tucker. I was born and raised in Chicago, Illinois, in the United States. I am the oldest of three boys. You cannot tell this from my voice, but I'm 6'8" tall, and I played college basketball in Charleston, South Carolina at the Citadel, despite having three knee surgeries in high school. When I graduated from college, I moved home. I was the first person in my family to graduate from college. And I was all set to make my mark on the world with my newly obtained business administration degree. And, you know, I look back now and realize kind of what a knucklehead I was to think I knew anything about business just because I had a degree. Fortunately, I was able to find that first job in the corporate headquarters of Wendy's International, the hamburger chain, in their marketing department. But unfortunately, I ended up living with my parents for the next 3.5 years as I helped my mom care for my father and my grandmother, who were both dying of different forms of cancer. In my professional career, as I said, I was a marketing executive with Wendy's. I was a hospital administrator. Then I made a major change in my life and became a police officer and did undercover narcotic work and was a SWAT team hostage negotiator. I started my own school security consulting business. I was a girls' high school basketball coach. I've been a motivational speaker. Last year, I became an author. But for the last 9 years or so, I've kind of considered myself a cancer warrior. And then finally, my wife and I have been married for 28 years. We have one child, a daughter, who's a graduate of the United States Air Force Academy and is an officer in the new branch of the military here in the U.S., the Space Force.
Terry mentioned that he considers himself a cancer warrior and has so for the past 9 years. He also has lost family members to cancer, as many of us have. So here's Terry's cancer story.
So when I was diagnosed, I was a high school basketball coach and I had a callus that broke open on the bottom of my foot, right below my third toe. And being a coach, you're on your feet a lot. So I didn't think a lot of it initially. But after a couple of weeks when it didn't heal, I went to see a podiatrist, a foot doctor friend of mine. And he took an x-ray and he's like, Terry, I think you have a cyst in there and I can remove it. And he did. And he showed it to me. It was just a little gelatin sac with some white fat in it. No dark spots, no blood, nothing that gave either one of us concern, but he sent it off to pathology to have it looked at. And then 2 weeks later, I get a call from him. And as I said, he was a friend of mine. And the more difficulty he was having explaining what was going on, the more frightened I was becoming until he just kind of laid it out. He said, Terry, I've been a doctor for 25 years and I've never seen this form of cancer. You have a rare form of melanoma that presents either on the bottom of the feet or the palms of the hands. And I recommend you go to MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston and be treated. And so I did. And I had the bottom of my foot excised to remove the tumor. I had all the lymph nodes in my groin removed as well. And then when I healed, I was put on a weekly injection of a drug called interferon. And interferon for me was not a cure. It was just as my oncologist used to say, we're going to try to kick the can down the road and see how long we can keep this disease at bay. But the downside of interferon was it gave me severe flu-like symptoms every week after each injection. And I took those weekly injections for almost 5 years. So imagine having the flu every week for 5 years. And that wasn't a cure. That was just to keep the disease from coming back. 2017, the drug became so toxic to my body that I ended up in the intensive care unit with a fever of 108 degrees, which usually is not compatible with being alive. But fortunately, I was able to be saved. And as soon as the drug was stopped, the disease came back. 2018, I had my left foot amputated because of the cancer. 2019, it started to work its way up my leg into my shin. And I had two more surgeries then. And then last year, an undiagnosed tumor in my ankle area grew large enough that it fractured my tibia, my shin bone. And my only recourse right in the middle of the pandemic was to have my left leg amputated above the knee. And I also found out at that time that I have tumors in my lungs, which I'm being treated for now.
Sometimes when I have clients share a story like that for me in the therapy office, all I can say is that is a lot for someone to go through.
Yeah, it's, you know, I always say, and on that uplifting story, you know, I mean, most people think of melanoma as, you know, you're out in the sun too much sun exposure and things like that. And that's the primary cause of melanoma. But then there's the rarer form that I have. And there's an even rarer form that appears in our mucous membrane. So in your nose or your mouth or something like that, but it's still melanoma. And I mean, when I first was diagnosed, you know, I went through the gambit of emotions that I think anybody, you know, all those emotions that we associate with grief, you know, the depression, you know, I was mad. I kind of bargained with God. I did all this stuff. And then I just realized, you know what, these are the cards that I've been dealt and I'm going to have to play them. And I'm going to have to play them to the best of my ability. And it was kind of then that I started this whole, you know what, just embrace the suck. You know, this is going to suck, but embrace it and use it to make you a better person, as opposed to, you know, I always say that pain is inevitable in our lives. And I know I'm preaching to the choir when I'm talking to you about this, but, you know, pain is inevitable. And it doesn't have to be, you know, health pain or cancer pain or a chronic illness. I mean, you could flunk a test at school or break up with your boyfriend or your girlfriend or, you know, not get the promotion at work that you think you deserve. Pain is inevitable. Suffering, on the other hand, that's optional. That's what you do with that pain. Do you use it to make you a stronger and more determined individual? Or do you wallow in it and feel sorry for yourself and want people to feel sorry for you? It's a choice whether or not you want to, which one of those you want to, which handle, I guess, you want to grab on those. And I just figured, you know what? I'm going to grab the handle up. I'm going to take pain and flip it inside and use it to make me stronger, or, you know, burn it as fuel or use it as energy just to make me a stronger individual.
Pain is inevitable. Suffering is optional. I know I've said this on the podcast and my blog before. It's actually a fairly famous quote that's been attributed to a few different people, including the Dalai Lama, Haruki Murakami, and M. Kathleen Casey. It's true, though. And as Shinzen Young says, pain times resistance equals suffering. Interestingly, Terry hadn't heard the quote before he came to this idea on his own.
I think I pretty much came to it on my own. It was, you know, one of those things where, yes, I've been dealt a bad break. There were Winston Churchill, the former prime minister of Great Britain during World War II, had a great saying. He said, if you're going through hell, keep going. And I love that because, yeah, you know, I think most people would look at my journey and say, yeah, you've kind of been through hell, but I'm still going. You know, I'm still moving forward. And I always kind of think back to the Shawshank Redemption movie that came out back in the 90s, where they had the saying, you know, get busy living or get busy dying. I want to be busy living. I want to be continuing to move forward. And, you know, you're looking at me right now. There's no S on my chest. I'm not wearing a cape. You know, I have bad days. I mean, there are days I cry. There are days I get down. There are days I feel sorry for myself. I just choose not to stay in those positions because they really don't get you anywhere. My grandmother used to always say that worry is kind of like a rocking chair. It gives you something to do, but it doesn't get you anywhere. And, you know, so I love that quote. And it's like, yeah, you know, yeah, you can feel sorry for yourself, or you can try to get up and you can try to move forward. And during those 5 years I was on interferon, I'll be honest with you, there were days I prayed to die. It's just like, God, please take me out of this. I am so sick of being sick, you know, and I just prayed to die. And sometimes, you know, I used to talk, I'm like, okay, I got to win this day. Well, sometimes winning the day was just winning this 5 minutes. I just got to get out of bed and I got to make it to the sofa. And if I can do that, it's been a good day. Or, you know what, maybe I'm feeling really good and I can throw a load of laundry in the wash machine to kind of help my wife out and things like that. So, you know, we kind of, I think a lot of times tend to, you know, especially with whatever we're dealing with in life, you know, I've got to do this. Well, if you break this down into, you know, bite-sized chunks, it's kind of like, you know, I've got to get better at something. Well, instead of getting better at something, what if you got 1% better every day? You know, at the end of 30 days, you're 30% better than when you started. And getting 1% better is a whole lot more manageable than saying, I've got to get 100% better right now. In a lot of ways, that's kind of impossible.
Terry has learned a lot about life and what it means to be human from his battle with cancer. And I think when any of us really start to reflect on our illnesses, we have the opportunity to do the same. So let's hear what Terry has learned.
I think that we can do so much more than we ever thought we could do. I recall a couple quick stories. One was I read a story about a professor in the 1950s at Johns Hopkins University out on the East Coast of the United States who did an experiment with rats. And it was a pretty simple experiment. He took rats and he put them in a tank of water that were over their head. And he wanted to see how long they could tread water before they would drown. And the average rat treaded water for about 15 minutes. And just as they were about ready to go under, he reached in, grabbed them, pulled them out, dried them off, let them rest for a while. And then he put them back in that same tank of water. And the second time around, those rats treaded water for 60 hours. Think about that. 15 minutes the first time, 60 hours the second time, which taught me two things. One, the importance of hope in our lives. We've got to have something we're aspiring to or we're looking forward to, or life's got to get better. So we've got to have some hope in our life. And two, just how much more, you know, the physical body that we have can do. And I've got a friend here in the U.S. who's a former Navy SEAL, some of the toughest men, you know, in the military here in the U.S. And they talk about their 40% rule. And their 40% rule says that if you're at the end of your rope, you can't go on. You know, for them, you can't run another step or swim another lap or do another push-up. You're only at 40% of your maximum. And you still have 60% left to give to yourself. So whenever I get in those dark places or those down places, I always remember those kind of two stories. And it's like, no, you have so much more to give to yourself. I don't care how bad you're feeling. Just get up and keep moving forward.
I imagine it can be difficult to remain hopeful when facing cancer that continues to spread throughout your body. And I know a lot of you listeners with other chronic illnesses, such as autoimmune diseases, often have difficulty with hopefulness. I asked Terry how he manages to remain hopeful.
I mean, when I found out that I, you know, was going to have my leg amputated and I had these tumors in my lungs, I went to the mortuary, I went to the cemetery, I went to the church, and I planned my funeral. And I kind of got some brushback from people from that. You know, it's like, you know, don't you think that's kind of defeatist? You know, and I kind of looked at them like, well, you know, little secret. Last time I checked, everybody's going to die. You know, I mean, and, you know, nobody's working on a cure for life right now. So yeah, I kind of looked at it like everybody dies, but not everybody really lives. And there's a Native American Blackfoot proverb here that I heard years ago that I just love. And it goes like this. When you were born, you cried and the world rejoiced. Live your life in such a way so that when you die, the world cries and you rejoice. And I think the operative words there are live your life. You know, you've got to live a life so that, you know, people are going to cry when you're gone, but you're like, yeah, all right. You know, we're moving on to something that's bigger and better and things like that. And that's what I want, you know, and I think you do that. And death is not, I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not hastening it. I don't want it to come anytime in the near future. But when it does, it doesn't scare me that much. And it doesn't because I think I found my purposes in life and I live those purposes. And having done that, it's okay. It's okay to move on. It's okay to die. I don't know why we're all, you know, real excited. Oh, I can't talk about it. I mean, I've got a neighbor who, whenever we talk about my cancer or, you know, that I went to the cemetery and stuff, nope, can't talk. Nope, let's talk about something else. Can't deal with it. So it's like, well, you know what? It's going to happen to you eventually. You're going to have to deal with it. So see what happens.
Everybody dies, but not everybody lives. Let's just sit with that for a moment. Terry takes on a certain attitude and mindset towards life, which is really apparent already. Why is this helpful and beneficial to his life and his overall health?
You know, again, it's kind of like, you know, which handle are you going to grab? Are you going to grab the handle of hope, or are you going to grab the handle of, you know, pity and feeling sorry for yourself? And I guess over these 9 years, I've kind of developed what I call my four truths. And I'll give those to you. They're just one sentence. I have them on a post-it note sitting here on my desk. So I see them multiple times during the day. And these are things that they're just part of me. They're things that I've come to know over these last 9 years. So the first one is, you need to control your mind or your mind is going to control you. And you know this, you know, our brains are hardwired to avoid pain and discomfort and to seek pleasure. So to the mind, you know, the status quo is good. You know, things are fine. Don't mess with it. But the only way you're going to grow, the only way you're going to get better is if you step outside of those comfort zones. But that's scary. You know, it's scary to do that. What are people going to say? You know, what, you know, are people going to make fun of me? What if I fail? So what? Who cares? You know, especially when you're young, get out there and fail. Fail often because you'll learn things. So that's the first one. You need to control your mind. The second one we sort of talked about a little bit earlier about how we need to embrace the pain and the difficulty that we're all going to experience in life and use that to make us a stronger and more determined individual. And again, I talked about, you know, instead of running from pain, instead of, you know, our brains getting away, and you know this as a therapist, to, you know, people run to alcohol, they run to drugs, they run to bad behavior whenever they get into pain. But what if you didn't do that? What if you did just the opposite and took that pain and flipped it inside and burned it as fuel or used it as energy to make you a stronger person? And like I said, there's no S on my chest. I don't wear a cape. So, you know, if I can do it, pretty much anybody can do it because I am the biggest baby in the world. I mean, when I was a little kid and I knew my mom was taking me to the pediatrician for, you know, a shot or a vaccine, I'd wait till she got out of the car and then I'd lock all the doors from the inside, you know, and that was long before key fobs was available. So she used to have to go in and get the pediatrician and his nurse. And it was kind of a cat and mouse game to get me out of the car. And then literally the pediatrician would carry me over his shoulder into his office. That's how afraid I was of getting a shot, you know, and now there are days when I'm on this clinical trial that I'll get stuck with a needle 18, 19, 20 times in one day. And it's like, you know, does that hurt? Yeah, it hurts, but take that hurt and use it to make you stronger. So that's number two. Number three is more of a legacy truth. And it's this, what you leave behind is what you weave in the hearts of other people. And I think it's important for all of us to think about sort of the end game of our lives. You know, what are people going to say about you at your funeral? You know, would your ancestors be proud of the life that you lived? You know, they set the table for you. You know, would they be proud of this table that you're going to set for the next generation? So that's number three. And then number four is pretty self-explanatory. As long as you don't quit, you can never be defeated. And, you know, my pain, your pain, everybody's pain is going to end someday. I mean, mine may end through surgery. It may end through medication. Quite frankly, it may end when I die. But if I quit, if I give up, if I give in, pain will always be a part of my life.
Every time mindset comes up in an interview, I like my guests to share how they would respond to those of you who have been listening this whole time and still might be thinking, you know, enough with all this mindset stuff. Mindset won't fix me. So here's what Terry says.
I've had that, not a lot, but I've had it enough that it bugs me now where people will come up to me and hear my story and it'll be like, you know, Terry, I could never do what you did. And I kind of look at them sort of as a smart aleck and say like, yeah, you're right. You couldn't because you already defeated yourself. You know, why would you start anything with the attitude of, I can't do this, or I'm going to fail, or it's not going to work out? Why would you, you know, your brain can hold one thought at a time. Why would you make that a negative thought? And it's so easy for us to go to that negative place. You know, I always think about, you know, back in college, I knew guys who would go out and party, you know, the night before an exam or, you know, a big paper was due, you know, and then they'd come in hungover to the exam. And what do they say? What's the first thing they say? I'm going to blow this test. Yeah, absolutely. You're going to blow it. You've already decided you're going to blow it. Why wouldn't you at least come into the test and give yourself the benefit of the doubt? Hey, I paid attention in class most of the time that I was here. I'm going to do great on this test. Why not give yourself the benefit of the doubt that you're going to do well? Why do we always go to, oh, this, you know, I can't do this, or, you know, I'm going to blow this, or, you know, this is something that I'm not going to be successful at. If that's your attitude going in, my advice would be don't even try it. Don't even start it, because you're just going to frustrate yourself. So attitude is so important. I remember there was a basketball coach at the University of Indiana by the name of Bobby Knight when I was growing up. And he had a great quote. He said, mental is to physical as 4 is to 1. And if you think about that, you know, I mean, here's a guy who's basically coaching the physical aspect, you know, basketball. You know, we're going to do physical stuff. We're going to run, jump, and all that kind of stuff. But what he's saying is, no, before the physical, the mental part is so much more important. So for all those people who say, you know, I could never do it. Yeah, you're right. You could never do that. The mental is so much more important than the physical. If you can overcome all the negative mental stuff, the physical stuff will be a whole lot easier.
Terry and I talk a little more about this, and that part of the interview is available to patrons of Chronically Living. Follow the link in the show notes to sign up for your weekly content at only $5 a month. You might recall earlier that Terry mentioned he is an author, and he wrote a book, which I think we can have some takeaways from.
So the book is called Sustainable Excellence, the 10 Principles to Leading Your Uncommon and Extraordinary Life. And it was really a book born out of two conversations I had. One was with a former player that I had coached in high school who'd moved to Colorado, where my wife and I live. And we'd had dinner with her and her fiance a couple times. And I remember saying to her, you know, I'm really excited that you're living close and I can watch you find and live your purpose. And she got real quiet for a while and she kind of looked at me and she's like, well, coach, what do you think my purpose is? I said, I have no idea what your purpose is, but that's what your life should be about. Finding the reason you were put on the face of this earth and then living that reason. So that was one conversation. And then the other conversation was with a young man in college who reached out to me on LinkedIn and wanted to know what I thought were the most important things for him to learn to not just be successful in his job or in business, but in life in general. And I didn't want to give him the, you know, get up early, work hard, help others kind of stuff. Not that those aren't important. They are. They're very important. But I kind of feel they've been done. So I wanted to see if I could maybe go a little deeper. And so I thought about it for a while and I wrote some notes. And eventually I had these, you know, these 10 ideas, these 10 thoughts, these 10 principles. And so I sent them to him. And then I kind of stepped back and I was like, well, you know, I've got a life story that fits underneath this principle, or I know somebody whose life emulates this principle. And literally during the 3-month period between when I had my leg amputated and when I started chemotherapy for the tumors in my lungs, I sat down at the computer every day and I built stories. And they're not made up stories. They're actual, you know, this is a real person and this is how he or she, you know, accomplished this or overcame that. And so I just built stories underneath each of the principles. And that's how sustainable excellence came to be. It's always fun for me as an author when somebody gets the book and they read it, because there's always one principle and the principles are not in any particular order. You know, one is not any more important than number 7 or anything like that. But there's always one principle that kind of everybody gravitates to, you know, oh, number 3 was the one for me, or number 5 was the one for, you know. And for me, the one that I kind of gravitate to is, and each principle is a chapter. And this chapter is basically most people think with their fears and their insecurities instead of using their minds. And I think that resonates with me because I've done that. I've probably done it more times than I care to admit that, you know, yeah, I want to do something. And I always tell when I speak to young people, you know, if there's something in your heart, something in your soul that you believe you're supposed to do, but it scares you, go ahead and do it. Because at the end of your life, the things that you're going to regret are not going to be the things you did. They're going to be the things you didn't do. And by then, it's going to be too late to go back and do them. So thinking with your mind or thinking, you know, rationally, we usually make good decisions that way. You know, when I was a hostage negotiator, we kind of looked at what we did as sort of riding on a teeter-totter or a seesaw at the park. If you've got a barricaded person or a drunk person or, you know, whatever it is, and their emotional end is way up in the air, they're not going to make good decisions. You've got to get to a point where you let them burn off a lot of that emotional energy and kind of get that teeter-totter to equilibrium, hopefully. And if you're really good or really lucky, you can get the rational side up in the air and the emotional side sort of down on the ground. And when you're making decisions with your rational brain, you're going to make much better decisions than if you're trying to make you know, a decision based on emotion. So that's one. There's a chapter in there that I talked about already about failing and failing often, especially when you're young. There's a chapter in there also about listening. That was another thing that I learned as a negotiator. You know, as a policeman, 99% of what you do is face-to-face with another person, whether you stop somebody for speeding and you're issuing them a citation, or whether you're responding to a radio run at somebody's house for a fight or whatever. It's face-to-face. And you can take visual clues in addition to everything else that's going on. You know, if you're talking to somebody and they're kind of like looking around, maybe they're looking to run. Right. Or, you know, if they're standing there and they're balling up their fists, you know, maybe they want to fight you. And you can see that and like, okay, I can do so. I can sit them down. I can handcuff them. I can put them in my car, whatever's appropriate for why I'm there and why we've contacted that person. But as negotiators, that person wasn't with us. They very well could have been blocks away, or we're negotiating through a locked door and, you know, they've got a hostage or something like that. And so we had to figure out what was going on based on what people were saying, what they weren't saying, and how they were saying it. And there were several times where we'd spend hours kind of over here talking about something when the real problem was over here. And they needed to burn off all that emotional energy to talk about this before they could ever get to the point where they were ready to talk about that. So what we did, you know, people say, oh, you talk the guy out or you talk the woman out. We didn't really talk them out. We kind of listened them out. You know, we would ask an open-ended question and just let them go on. And you had to be real good, or you had to be comfortable with silence. You know, you had to be comfortable with when you asked a question and they, you know, started talking, and then there was that silence. And as human beings, we like to fill that silence. We don't like it, but we had to get good at just let it go. Just let it sit there, because what'll happen is the person will start talking again. And that's what you want. They don't want to hear you talk, and they need to talk. They need to get that emotional energy out. So one of the chapters is about listening and the importance of listening to understand, as opposed to listening to respond. You know, it's like, hurry up, Kelsey, say what you want to say, because I want to get my two cents in. Well, that doesn't do any good. But if it's like, hey, Kelsey, I hear what you're saying. I don't know if I agree with it or not. Where are you coming from that? That's listening to understand. And that is so important, because as a society, as a world, we're not doing much of that today. You know, we're just yelling and screaming at each other, and we're really not getting anything done because of that. I think if we spent more time trying to listen to understand where the other person's coming from, we might be in a better situation.
So what I love about Terry's book and his principles is they are applicable to many areas of life. So one example is what Terry just said about listening makes perfect sense to me, because as a therapist, I mostly listen. Sometimes I reflect back or ask a question. Often I wait in silence until the client starts talking again. So it's a lot of listening. If you're interested in reading Terry's book, it's available at all major bookstores and in both ebook and paperback. For our lightning round questions.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. So what are the top five songs that describe your life?
I have my list. So I think the first one would be My Way, the old Frank Sinatra song. Kenny Loggins' This Is It. The Impossible Dream, which is from The Man from La Mancha, an old movie and play. We Are Family by Sister Sledge. And then You Gotta Have Faith. I would say those would be my five songs.
Nice. Yes, I definitely see a theme there. What's one thing you can't go a day without doing?
Praying. I probably spend an hour every day in prayer. It helps me. And I've met a lot of people through my cancer journey that I spend time praying for them, because I told them I would. And, you know, if I tell you I'm going to pray for you, I'm definitely going to pray for you.
Yeah, that's beautiful. What's one thing you plan on doing in your life that you haven't yet?
That's a good question. I don't know. I'm a little bit limited in my mobility these days. You know, when I wrote Sustainable Excellence, it's a book about success, how you can be successful. I'm kind of researching, haven't started writing yet. I'd like to write another book about another word that starts with S, and that's significance. You know, success is what we do for ourselves. Significance is what we do for other people. Now, I think you can be both. I think you'd be successful and significant, But I think I'd like to try to write, whether it happens or not, a second book that would be more about, you know, significance. So that's one thing. And then there's many years ago, there was a movie that came out called Field of Dreams, starred Kevin Costner in that. I'd like to go with my daughter, who's an adult now and recently got married. I'd like to go with her to that baseball field and play catch. So cool. I know it doesn't sound like much, but I think it'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. Describe your perfect day.
Any day I don't have to go to the hospital or the doctor. In all honesty, I was talking to a friend of mine who's probably about 10 years older, has been in a wheelchair for a number of years, not cancer related, more spinal cord related. And he said, you know, I would just like to have a period of time where I didn't have to go to a doctor. And I'm like, you know what? I know exactly how you feel. You know, it would just be nice not to have to think about that.
Yeah, totally makes sense. How do you inspire others to make the most of their lives?
A lot of it is through podcasts. I have this kind of 3-week window. So for a week, I go for therapy Monday through Friday. I go for infusion therapy at the hospital, and then I have 2 weeks off. And my wife and I kind of have this ongoing battle of, you know, you need to spend that 2 weeks resting and getting your blood counts back up and all that kind of stuff. Whereas I feel I like to be on podcasts, and I've been lucky to have been probably on a couple hundred now from all around the world. And I remember when I mentioned my dad was sick when I got out of college, he had end-stage breast cancer. And back in the 1980s, they did not know what to do with a man with breast cancer. So they told him to pretty much go home and die. Well, he lived another 3.5 years. And I believe he did it because he had a purpose. You know, he was in real estate, and he worked up till 2 weeks before he died. And I always kind of remember that, sort of tucked it away in the back of my mind. And as I go through this, it's like these 2 weeks, yeah, I could sit around and, you know, watch television and do all that kind of stuff. Or I could, you know, go on podcasts with nice people like you and have a conversation about my story and hopefully make a difference in somebody's life. And, you know, if we do that through our conversation tonight, today's been a good day. And so these, I don't care how tired I am, these podcasts energize me. They give me a purpose. So I guess that's the answer to your question.
Yeah, that's amazing. You've been an amazing guest. Where can we find you, follow you? You already mentioned where we can buy your book, which is everywhere.
Yeah, I have a blog called Motivational Check. Every day I put up a thought for the day, and with that thought comes a question to just kind of get you to think maybe how that quote could apply to your life or how you could apply it to your life in some way. On Mondays, I put up the Monday Morning Motivational Message, which is usually a video or a story. It's a little bit longer. I realize people's time is at a premium, so everything on there is pretty quick. Get in, get a quick hit of inspiration or motivation, and then move on. So motivationalcheck.com will get you to me. It'll get you to my social media sites. You can leave me a message if you want. So yeah, motivationalcheck.com.
Perfect. And that will definitely be in the show notes. Terry, thank you so much for coming on. You've been an absolutely amazing guest. This is, you know, beyond what I was even expecting. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me. I mean, again, I really mean that. You know, hopefully our conversation when this airs is going to make a difference in somebody's life. And if it does, today's been a good day.
Okay, so much of what Terry said really struck me, and you guys should have seen my face during this interview because he was literally talking about things that I talk about, that I've talked about on the show, that I talk about with clients, I talk about with myself even. So, you know, here's a couple examples. He mentioned embracing the suck, you know, embracing emotions, and I recently did an episode on acceptance of emotions and sensations. He mentioned not letting your thoughts control you, right? Which we had an episode on creating distance between ourselves and our thoughts. He suggested doing something daily and really having that life purpose. So for more on that, you can listen to the episode I did on values-based living. Terry's another example this season, and there have been so many, of people who do these things and feel like they are living good lives despite the physical challenges that they have. So let's do our reflection. What did you notice about your thoughts and feelings during this episode? And what are you noticing now about that noticing? And I'm breaking tradition, and next week there will be another interview episode, making 3 in a row. But until then, keep making the most of it. Special thanks to Mardi for the original music and Charity Williams for the original artwork.